you know, the why is critical because it gives us meaning in the struggle.
Welcome to Schoolin' Around, a podcast hosted by Branching Minds featuring prominent leaders, subject matter experts, and thought innovators with their perspectives on the current challenges facing K-12 education. I'm your host, Larissa Napolitan, a former teacher, instructional coach, and a member of the Branching Minds team, here to lead conversations with educational leaders and experts. My hope is to share with you not only valuable insights and knowledge from leaders in education, but have fun while doing it and shine a light on phenomenal educators and those that are on a mission to transform our schools and the lives of students. It's that time when schools are wrapping up another year. Celebrations are happening, awards have been given out, and educational leaders and teachers are reflecting on this past year and all that they accomplished. And they're already looking at next year, thinking about goals and making plans. I sat down with Karen Castle, longtime educational leader and executive director of professional learning for Branching Minds. She gave us some questions for leaders to reflect on about their MTSS practice and drop some wisdom for how to ready yourself for the next year. She's always a delight to talk with, ready to dig deep on topics around leadership and life. I hope you enjoy a conversation. Today, we are blessed to have Karen Castle on the show. Karen is the Executive Director of Professional Services here at Branching Minds. She has a long career as an educator, most of which was a principal and district leader. But for the last 20 years, you've been in the ed tech space. So feel free to introduce yourself a little more, share a little bit about yourself, and we're going to dive into our topics today. So welcome,
absolutely.
Karen.
Yeah, thank you so much, Larissa. It's great to be with you always. This is a fun opportunity. Not so much to think about the longevity of my career, because that's a little frightening sometimes if I think about it too much. But I think the thread through my career has always been about the educators. You know, I mean, I taught science. I love that. But I got into administration, you know, pretty early. And from the get-go, you know, I realized that not all teaching and not all teachers were created equal. And just like, you know, the students that I had in my classroom, they all needed various levels of support and understanding and, you know, somebody to walk through the seasons of their career with them, and then also, I think, just a thought partner to have. And so I got involved with professional learning many, many years ago before we had like national organizations and all of that, and helping my districts back then think about long-term goals for professional learning and actually having a plan for professional learning that was years in advance, you know, of course, flexible and able to be changed and all of that, but to be intentional about what we brought, you know, to teachers in the very limited amount of time that we had to think deeply with them and to move their practice forward. So this whole, you know, notion of we're all learners, you know, and if we can corral a whole school full of learners, both, you know, short, tall, you know, all the sizes and ages, that sets us up for just continuing to grow. And that's exciting to me, being in that space, whether it's a kid doing something for the first time or accomplishing something they didn't think they could, or if it's a teacher that through an evaluation or discussion says, you know, I didn't think I could do that. You know, and I didn't realize the difference that would make or so forth, but you know, nothing is more exciting than seeing people grow, whether it's some of the little kids in my life when they learn to ride their bike and, you know, feel free for the first time or whatever that is. So it's exciting to be a part of that.
Oh, that's awesome. I love that you said you liked being a thought partner, because
I have to say, in my career as an educator, those leaders that I was able to go to like bounce ideas off of, or even process a situation, and they were really partnering with me in that thought process, and just kind of asking probing questions. That was the most helpful kind of leader for me, because I didn't always need someone to tell me what to do, but to just like help me learn and figure that out as I go. Like, that was such a valuable asset to like my career growth. So I love that you said that, to be a thought partner. Is that what you meant by saying that?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, teaching is creative. You know, I never would have called myself a creative person. You know, I can't sew. I can't even write my own name. People can read, you know, I don't really have artistic creativity, but I am a very creative person. And I find most teachers are very creative, you know, when they get that space. And one of the things I try to do today in my role with Branching Minds and working with districts or my own team or whatever, you know, is to think about things that we decide today, what that's going to mean down the road. Because it is true that the solution that we create today creates new problems tomorrow, you know, and we can lessen the number of problems it creates by really thinking, you know, downstream from, you know, this moment. And I think in education, I was going to say today, but, you know, when I was in a classroom, when I was a principal, it was the same way. We're such an action-oriented culture that, you know, to do is to be. And you know, I think we set ourselves up to make a lot of mistakes and to experience a lot of heartache that maybe we don't need to. You know, if we give ourselves a moment, you know, to think and to be creative and to think about the impact to all stakeholders. And that's something that we'll talk about when we're thinking about, you know, these questions, you know, that you wanted to explore today.
Yeah, I think that what you said about sort of forward thinking, do you find that sort of the urgency of the problems that we're encountering in education hinder that forward thinking, or kind of compel it to happen faster? Like, is that a barrier to being able to be more forward thinking or thinking down the road?
Boy, that's a whole podcast, I think, in and of itself. But I think there's a bunch of factors in that. And again, I think as a human being, we tend to be, you know, uncomfortable in the unknowing, in the lack of clarity. We tend to think that if we find certainty, we'll be more comfortable. Life won't be so hard, and, you know, all of that. So we kind of are on this quest, I think, all the time, in all parts of my life anyway, to cling to some certainty about things. And it's just, there's not that many things that are certain. And so I think that's part of it. And I think that discomfort with struggle is hard for people to sit alongside. And it doesn't bother me very much to see kids struggle. I love to watch kids figure things out, you know, or at least figure things out. And I don't mind groups of adults together, you know, when they are passionately sharing/arguing about, you know, things. That doesn't make me hugely uncomfortable. And I find it can be very, as long as we couch it and we keep moving in a positive struggle, you know, way. And I find that when we know our why, that we can maintain that that positive stasis, so to speak, of the struggle.
Yeah. Well, and I think that that's, you know, that helps combat that urgency. I think there is this sense of, you know, there's such these urgent problems that we need to find a solution to really quickly. Yeah. But some of these problems aren't going to be solved by a quick solution. It is a long-term work that has to be done. And you have to sort of, like you said, be okay in that uncomfortable season that may be longer than we expect. And I think that, I mean, we can say in the last, how many, you know, several years, like we, as a society, I think we realized how uncomfortable we are with the uncomfortable.
Sure.
Like when it lasts longer than we anticipate, because that's the thing, is that if you don't know your why in that season of, or that struggle, you will give up quicker, right? I think there was like this thought experiment, or there was an experiment about, if you don't have hope or you don't have a why to like guide you, I think it had to do with mice in a bucket, right? If they had a little ray of light, they could keep swimming in like a bucket of water. I'm butchering the story, but like, you know, but if a mouse is just swimming in water in the dark, like they have no hope. And so they give up. And so that's the idea. Like if you hold your anchor of the why, yes, then perhaps you can move forward. And so I think in the work of educators, there really has to be a strong rooted mission and vision and a strong why for a team. I think that that's, you know, oftentimes educators sort of scoff at the leaders that say, remember your why, but there is truth to it. It's just sometimes in the midst of the day to day, that's not the thing that's going to always help, but.
Well, and it can't be the only thing, you know, because along with the why, we have to know the what and the how, you know, yes. So I think if leaders rely on only the why, they're taking the cheap way out, you know, and we can't ignore that we have to have a path forward. And yeah. So, you know, the why is critical because it gives us meaning in the struggle. Mm. You know, my why is now in my later years, you know, my why is to be, you know, a loving, you know, person who make space for growth and, you know, as much as I can, you know, shoves judgment aside and, you know, know that it's all part of that growth. And so that's my personal why in the situations of my life. And, you know, so when I'm in a tough spot, when I am looking for my why, and I can see now that I have a purpose to stay in that struggle to, you know, deliver my why, you know, then I can move forward and I have more resilience that way. Yeah. Boy, this has gotten heavy.
Oh my gosh, Karen. Well, this is why I love talking to you, because I love the way that you think, because it's a little bit about philosophically thinking about education and the issues that we talk about, but it's also, you come at it from such a leadership perspective, and whether that also is some of the different experiences that you've had, and the wisdom that you share is always encouraging to me as an educator. And so I hope for our listeners as well.
Yeah,
but the real reason, yes, I wanted to have you here was because we wanted to talk about particularly MTSS implementation and, you know, talking to school leaders and administrators about like what questions they should be asking about their MTSS practice. So if you want to just address a few questions that administrators should ask, that would be awesome. And we can kind of explore those.
Absolutely. I think, you know, the global question is MTSS making a difference?
Mm.
You know, and that seems like a large question, but I think on a, you know, taking that 30,000 foot view, if we don't notice that MTSS is making a difference, why are we doing it? And then following that with who's it making a difference to and for? Because, you know, in my, again, my view, MTSS is a way of operating. It's a way of doing business in a district, at a school, in a classroom. And so if all of those stakeholders aren't learning and growing and benefiting from this system that we've created, then we need to retool. You know, we need to take another look. And I think a lot of times we think only about the student and the outcomes that we want for students, which are always lagging indicators of success, right? And so we can find earlier indicators of success when we look at MTSS as an organizational principle or an organizational structure, you know, for delivering support for kids. And so I think it's really important to say what new behaviors, what new practices am I seeing in our staff? You know, what as a leader, whether I'm a district leader or a principal or a grade level leader, how am I different? You know, what has this practice done to make me a better leader? I know when I get the privilege of going out and talking with districts or schools or, you know, doing a professional learning session, you know, I generally ask at the end of that those conversations on those workshops is, how does this make you a better fill in the blank? And that's a really hard question for people to answer. But I would encourage, you know, administrators that are at this time of year to ask those questions, and not just in isolation, but to ask, you know, some of your teachers, ask your district leaders, ask parents, you know, ask some kids, you know, what's been different for you this year in the way that, you know, your teachers have supported you. You know, there's just a lot of good meaning to find, you know, are we heading in the direction we intended to head, kick this thing off? And so yeah. I think those are some questions, again, that are kind of high level, but mm-hmm. I think are a great place to jump in and start your reflection. Does any of that resonate with you?
Well, I thought about when you talked about the lagging indicator of the student outcomes, like that's the lagging indicator. I had never thought about it that way because like I talked about earlier with the sort of the urgency, right? We want to see results quickly, yeah. Right? Because there is this need to see that progress. And I think the idea that student outcomes are that lagging indicator, but like some of the progress starts with the adults.
Yes.
And I do think, I mean, most of the time in any district, improvement starts with, are the adults feeling successful at what they're doing each day? And then that, because, you know, all of those results on state assessments and achievement, like those, you don't see those results for a long time, but it's like, do we, as we go from day to day, are we seeing the success? And I think sometimes the culture of a school is a measure of that. Is it a happier place? Is our students happy to come to school? Are teachers, because if you're not feeling successful in your job, you're not happy to come every day. And so I think that that's a huge indicator of whether you're in the right direction. So I thought about that. I was like, we so often want to see that student outcome come first. Absolutely. And necessarily so, because that's the whole point, right? Like that's all that we're about. But when you're trying to measure it all, like the progress starts, you know, that slope starts with the happy, it's the happy slope, right?
Well, we can hope, but, yeah. But I do think that that's true. And to, you can hear different conversations, you know, happening. So some of this evaluation, excuse me, is soft in thinking about it. It's not all hard data. But when you hear a shift to a super problem-solving lens, to a continuous improvement, you know, lens, and you're hearing that in the teacher's workroom or lounge, or you're hearing that in grade level meetings or committee meetings or what have you, when you begin to see educators bringing data to tell their story with, you know, there are indicators. Okay, we're really setting this system up in the way that we intended, and we should start seeing results with kids, you know. But there are some leading indicators that should be being watched and paid attention to and documented. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So any other questions beyond sort of, is the MTSS, was that was kind of the big question, and there was little ones underneath?
No, there's a zillion, you know, and I've been accused of being the queen of questions and not many answers, but it's okay. You know, I think it also, you know, the questions I would ask would hearken right back to the framework of MTSS, to looking at those key components of, you know, what has happened? What are we doing differently with universal instruction, with tier one instruction? How has being super focused on this system increased our awareness of student need in core instruction and how we come to the table with our planning and so forth to really enhance, differentiate, you know, attack wide student needs within tier one support and not pushing everything out to tier two or tier three or what have you. And so, you know, looking at each component, you know, are we identifying, you know, kids the way we intend to so that we can support them? So taking each of the components, examining the quality of the intervention or support plans that we've created. Do they all have goals? Do they all have you know, metric of success or progress? You know, so are all the components, what's the quality of our plan? And how do I know? You know, not just, you know, teachers tell me or that I know, or, you know, we covered it in professional development, so they're doing it. But you know, where have I laid my eyes on this so that I know? Now, most districts, most schools don't focus on all those components in year one. You know, they're going to say, we're really focusing on creating plans for tier kids who need tier two and tier three level support in reading and math or in behavior. So they've set some priorities and that's where they're starting. And so it may not be a matter of reflecting on all of the components in year one, but on those that you've prioritized as your starting point, your jumping in point with MTSS. So, you know, and I think every year, you know, again, as a leader, you know, I ask myself, so how has my leadership changed? How have I grown as a leader? You know, where have I seen areas that I need to step in and figure out a way to support, you know, whether it's an interventionist, whether it's a grade level, whether it's a department, you know, whether it's saying we need to go back to the district plan because this part isn't working very well for us. Whether it's saying, okay, we need to reallocate resources. You know, we need more time here in our day.
Yeah. I like what you said about how do we know? Cause I think as a leader, that's really like, you have to do the work to look at the data to really examine what are the indicators that we're meeting all these goals that we've set or making progress on them? Cause maybe it's not you met them, but you've moved the needle a little bit in this area, depending on, you know, what you set out to do. And then I also wanted to say, like, I like that you said, you know, when you're implementing MTSS, you're not doing all the things, you know, full 100% the first year. You're choosing your areas of focus. And I think that's really key because as an educator, and even when I was leading and helping with school improvement, you know, oftentimes those things were so overwhelming. We had so many things we needed to work on. But really kind of as a team, really deciding what is our focus going to be and putting our efforts towards that, not necessarily ignoring all the other things, but like when you can put your full effort into one thing, you'll make a lot more progress than spreading yourself too thin, I think. So I like that you said that.
Well, that ability to prioritize, you know, and to stay true to that, no matter kind of what those emergencies pop up to be. Mm-hmm. You know, we have to deal with true emergencies, but a lot of times everything that we call an emergency may need further evaluation, whether it rises to that level or not. And so I think, again, through this leadership lens, it's so important to be that person that stays true to the plan and you know, keeps pulling people back to the plan. Mm-hmm. And, but I think it's super important to take a break. You know,
well, maybe that last question is,
don't forget this part of this intentional practice.
Yeah. That last question is, what are you going to do to rest? and refresh. Because you're right. Like, I think there is that sense of, after all the reflecting you do at the end of the year, to really think about, okay, how can I rest well in order to be ready to tackle the work again in the fall? And in some of this, you address sort of some, you know, we have our newer administration readying themselves for a new position next year, whether it be the building or district level, and they're implementing MTSS for the first time. And I'm just curious about what kind of advice or even wisdom you would share with those newer leaders who are new at this job, you know, a part of leading their districts or their campuses.
Well, I do think that the analogy of putting your oxygen mask on first is pretty critical. I know it gets overused, but you know, we have to take care of ourselves. I am not wise when I don't sleep or I don't eat or I don't get up and move about, I don't get some sunshine, you know, if I don't laugh, you know, those things that keep me living my life and living my truth, you know, are, I think, so important. So, you know, I know that it's impossible, you know, to say self-care and not have people roll their eyes, and including me, but in essence, nobody else can take, you know, really great care of you but you, you know, so we've got to do that. And so I think that is really important. And I think too, I don't know, you know, a lot of the answers. And when I'm part of a group that shares ownership of a problem, of a need or what have you, I feel invigorated and challenged and pushed and free from being the only one who owns this problem. And I think one of the things as a young administrator I had to learn was that I'm not responsible for everything by myself, and that I don't have the ability to have all the answers and solutions for folks. And I also have always believed that teachers, that educators want to do the very best by kids. And if we can connect there, then we will find a solution. You know, we will find another strategy to try. You know, so I think people should read. I think new administrators, people in new roles, people old to roles should read. And listen to others who have walked the walk. And, you know, so, you know, one of the things that I haven't always done a great job of is to stay plugged in with a mentor, stay plugged in with someone I can reason things out with. You know, so again, it just goes back to, if I start thinking I'm the solution, we're all in big trouble, you know, because that's so limiting. And then it puts so much pressure on me that I can't, you know, that's too stressful. It's too overwhelming. And I'm all brainstem, you know, I'm not in the best part of my thinking brain, you know? So I think those are the pieces of advice, is learn your craft. You know, read about leadership, read about MTSS, listen to podcasts, but make sure you have someone who has like beliefs that you can reason things out with, and that you stay committed to that relationship, so that you don't go off the rails and become somebody you didn't intend to be.
That's great advice. I mean, I think it's great advice for any role, you know, I think that's why teachers need mentors and, you know, the team. I like what you said about how, you know, sharing some of that burden. I think having a strong team, you know, for administrators is really to figure out how can we all help collectively have the answers, instead of it just being about one person, you know, in the building, or, you know, because sometimes even if you, you know, always look to the counselor to have this, have the answer, or always look to this school nurse or whoever, like, I think that some, that, that creates a pressure, that's hard. It's a different kind of culture. So I think that that's helpful, but as a leader, sometimes it can feel really lonely. And I think having a mentor, having a thought partner that, can understand your position and help sort of be a sounding board for things is really key. So yeah.
Yeah. I think it's true in life. You know, you want to grow, you gotta have others around you. We are pack animals, right?
Yeah, exactly. So going into these summer months, you know, this is sort of the slow time after the busyness of the end of the school year. Do you have any encouragement for administrators and leaders?
Oh, I think I do. And I think I want to correct a thought that the summer for an administrator is not a slow period. in most cases, it was one of my busiest times, you know, because a lot of things you're wrapping up, but you're also retooling, you're hiring, you're, you know, doing all of these things. And so I do think it's critical to take a week and unplug, you know, and I mean, unplug. And I was never very good at that. I was better doing it like at the winter break, you know, like yeah. Things were rolling along and I really could kind of unplug. But again, I think the summer is a great time for leaders to practice their intentional behaviors. You know, you intend to go into the school building or go into your office and not check your email for the first hour, but to have conversation with the people you need to converse with, to do the observations, the study, you know, that you've carved at that hour. Practice that in the summer. You know, get some practice in the things that, you know, you think will make you a better human being, a better leader, you know, more productive. I think the summer is a great time to practice that. You know, I think another thing is take your shoes off, walk in the grass, get grounded and, you know, connection with the big ball, the big energy, you know, let that get back into you. So, yeah.
And again, yeah.
Just a good time to practice discipline, because you want to just let your hair down and you want to stop and you want to just say, I've earned this break or whatever. And you have earned a break, but you know, you can't take, you know, weeks and weeks to refuel. So,
yeah. Well, I know that for leaders and administrators, that time in the summer does look very different. You know, they may have some time off, but not as much as, not as much as teachers do. Well, Karen, as always, I love conversations with you because I just enjoy hearing you talk about school leaders and just even your passion to help people learn and grow. And so kind of speaking of learning and school, I mean, we schooling around, the question I'm asking everyone these days is, when you were a kid, what was the most fun part of school? It could be anything. It could be recess. It could be lunchtime. Any part of school.
You know, I was a busy kid in class, not always in the best way. But my mom in elementary school was our school secretary, which added a layer of very, you know, handy accountability for me, which I, you know, my parents were tough, so I didn't misbehave a lot, but I was a little ornery. We had, and this you might find hard to believe, we had story time, and it was part of our creative writing process, you know, where we would tell a story and then we would write that story and what have you. And I remember discovering that I had a penchant for speaking in front of groups of people when I was like, you know, 10 and 11 years old, it was my turn to tell my story, and, you know, it then, you know, butted up to recess. And so it's like the next day, can I finish my story? So, of course, Mrs. Wilhoit had to say yes. And so I took a whole nother period, you know, to tell my story, because, of course, my classmates were thrilled that I was doing this. And Mrs. Wilhoit was getting the biggest kick out of it. And, you know, then later found out that she, you know, shared this with my mother, you know, that she just was curious how long I could actually go.
You had a captive audience. You're like, I'm going to go as long as I can. If that keeps. Yeah.
I don't know. At what point she finally pushed on the brakes and said, this is enough. I've indulged you quite enough. But those kinds of things, you know, were really great. I just remember so fondly my teachers way back in the day. I mean, this was a long time ago, differentiating for me, realizing, what they saw in me. I had my fifth grade teacher let me roam about, organizing the patrol squad, that did, crossing guard and that kind of stuff, which was way easier than her trying to keep me settled in class, I guess. And when I became a principal, there was a fire at my building. It was, all over the news and newspaper and all that. I get this card in the mail from, my fifth grade teacher saying, I knew when I heard about this awful thing happening at this school and read that you were the principal, that it would all be okay.
Oh, that's amazing.
Because I was bossy when I was in the fifth grade.
I love that. Well, I just love that. Like, it's amazing you didn't become a comedian or something. You like learned how to captivate an audience and like go after that fame or seeking that. I mean, I guess you do as a teacher. There's a little bit of like, as a teacher, I was a middle school teacher and I had to be entertaining. I mean, absolutely. Maybe one day I'll tell the story on the podcast of me teaching with a British accent.
Oh, fun.
Anything to captivate middle schoolers, I guess, is the key. So, well, Karen, thank you so much for chatting with me today. Absolutely. I just appreciate it.
It's fun. Always fun. Thank you, Larissa.
Thanks for listening to Schoolin' Around, a podcast hosted by Branching Minds. And don't forget to subscribe to this podcast to hear all our future episodes. As well, if you're enjoying our content, would you do us a favor and rate and review our podcast on iTunes? This helps others find our podcast and let us know how much you love what we're creating. Branching Minds is an educational technology company using learning sciences and technology to help districts effectively personalize learning through MTSS. To learn more about us, check out our website, branchingminds.com, or follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or LinkedIn @branchingminds.